In a world in which movies struggle to find plot, Alan Adams of The Main Edge breaks it down for you in Pass the Popcorn. Now on Downtown with Rich Kimball.
Yes, time to talk movies. Alan Adams of The Main Edge with us, brought to you by our friends at, what's the movie theater? Oh, yeah, Bagram Hall Cinema 10. Bagram Hall Cinema 10, where they have a film for everybody in the family. Stillwater Avenue in Bangor. Hello, Al.
Hello, how are you?
Well, I'm doing well. I'm sad to hear that you took one for the team out walking the dog today, huh?
Yeah, no, the sidewalks were definitely on the slippery side. And I slid around a little bit over the course of our walk, and I was like less than a block from home. Like I was just around, like I could see my house from where I was. And I took a step, and then it was just like feet went out from under me, landed on my hip, the whole shebang. It really laid me up for most of the day. I'm feeling better now. Like,
now, did you lie on the ground and say, Stella, go home and tell Sheridan?
Well, Sheridan was already at work, wouldn't have worked. She expressed some concern, but was clearly unprepared to do any sort of triage.
Right.
And so she basically just sort of did the sort of toe-tapping dance that dogs will sometimes do when they don't know what else to do, and squeaked a lot. And yeah. I'm like, okay, I'm okay. I'm going to get up, and we're going to go home.
And it wasn't quite icy enough that you could just grab onto the leash.
I just tell her to go.
Right,
yeah.
And pull you down on your back. No.
No, I had to get up and walk like a chump.
Well, we're glad you made it in. Hope you're feeling better. What a fine time we had on Friday night. Where did all those people come from at the Bangor Arts Exchange?
It was great, man. Like, it's funny. I was talking to Josh Gass over at Launchpad today, actually, and we were talking about it, and we came to the conclusion that I think it may have been our best ever house at the Arts Exchange. Yeah, I mean, anytime you're doing a show and they have to bring in more chairs, like, you got to feel good about the way things are going.
That's a good sign, yeah.
But yeah, no, it was a hoot. We had a really good time, I thought.
Absolutely. And the next focus group show coming up late February, right?
That's right. Yep, we'll be back over at the Next Generation Theater, home away from home.
Awesome. All right, well, a lot of movie stuff going on. Let's start with Academy Awards nominations today. 9 Best Picture nominees. The biggest surprise, I think, to me, I talked about it earlier with Gary Tangway, that Knives Out didn't get a nomination.
I was surprised not to see Knives Out. I was also surprised. I kind of thought Uncut Gems had a shot.
Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, you're never going to be able to tell what the Academy's going to do. I mean, I liked Ford versus Ferrari. It's very much an Oscar movie. So I'm not necessarily super surprised to see it there. Although having it there at the expense of other maybe potentially more worthy nominees, not great. It was great. I was psyched to see Little Women there, which was really good. But yeah, like I missed Knives Out and I missed Uncut Gems. Like, those were the two where I really was like, it's too bad that they didn't get the recognition that I think they deserve.
And I have not seen Uncut Gems yet, but I was kind of pulling for Adam Sandler to get a nomination, but it puts a tough field this year.
Yeah. It's a stacked category for sure. At a certain point, there's not a whole lot you can do about it. Like, I mean, you know, De Niro's not in there. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, it's like, there's no shame. You look at the list, you know, Antonio Banderas, Leonardo DiCaprio, Adam Driver, Joaquin Phoenix, Jonathan Pryce. There's no shame in coming in sixth on a list like that.
And I was looking at supporting actor. Good Lord. Pacino, Hanks, Pitt, Pesci, Anthony Hopkins.
It's not. And the craziest thing about that is it's practically a foregone conclusion that Brad Pitt's going to win that award, despite the fact that the category is so stacked. It's just, it's just indicative, I think, of just how, of not just how good he was in Once Upon a Time in Hollywood, but how well that movie has been received.
Well, which I finally got around to watching Saturday night, and man, did I love it.
Oh, so good.
I mean, that's a long movie, but that's one of those where as soon as it ended, I wanted to go back and watch it again.
Well, it's, and Tarantino has this wonderful knack of sort of creating these dynamics that you, as an audience member, you just want to sort of, you want to be in the, you want to hang out with these guys, it's like, and granted, they're like weirdo degenerates, but they're interesting weirdo degenerates. And it's like the relationship between the two of them, like he has such a wonderful, sense of that sort of male friendship kind of dynamic, and he's recreating a time that he clearly holds near and dear to his heart. Like, it was such a loving homage to that late 60s Hollywood that that he so clearly is, you know, has such a, you know, a deep-seated affection for. Yeah, it's pretty great.
And we've seen it before with Inglourious Basterds, both, you know, changing history. But hey, it's, you know, Once Upon a Time. It tells you right there in the title that this may be not factual. I found, and I don't want to give any spoilers away, but I found what he did. I found that to be incredibly moving at the end. I was very touched by that.
Yeah. Well, and I mean, it's like ultimately, and I mean, again, you want to avoid spoilers, but I don't think it's a spoiler to say when the story begins Once Upon a Time, it ends and they lived happily ever after.
Yeah.
Like, that's just how it goes. And that's basically what you get, just, you know, through a Tarantino lens. And you can probably imagine, if you haven't seen the movie, you can probably imagine some of how that goes.
I guess the other big news of the day, that again, no women nominees for Best Director, no Greta Gerwig, no Lulu Wang, several other worthy candidates.
It's ridiculous that Greta Gerwig is not nominated for Best Director, because Little Women is an exceptional movie. And the Academy thinks so, too, because it's nominated literally everywhere else.
Right, right.
You know, Best Picture, you got a Best Actress nod, a Best Supporting Actress nod, Best Adapted Screenplay, Best Costume Design, Best Production Design, literally everything except director. And if I'm Greta Gerwig, I'm sitting there and it's like, the F do I have to do?
Right. Do they direct themselves?
Do you know what I mean? And it's like, and, you know, and it's reflective of, well, I mean, I think the big indicator of, maybe why Greta Gerwig does not have a Best Director nod is the fact that Joker has 11 nominations.
Yeah, which, again, I haven't seen Joker yet. I understand it's a good movie.
I liked it, and, you know, I liked it more than a lot of my peers did. It's an unforgettable performance from Joaquin Phoenix. I don't think Todd Phillips deserves to be in that Best Director conversation. Certainly not over the likes of someone like Greta Gerwig.
Well, let's talk about a couple of movies that you did see over the weekend. One of them that has generated lots of awards buzz, 1917. What did you think?
It's great. Yeah. I'm always a little hesitant going into movies that have been billed to me as quote unquote technical achievements. Because the whole deal with 1917 is it's shot so as to resemble a single unbroken continuous take, and so there's a lot of, you know, sort of technical wizardry that has to go into making something like that work. And so as someone who's programmed to kind of look for the seams when I'm told that something like that is going on, like, I wondered if that was going to somehow negatively impact my experience of watching the movie. I wondered if it was going to be technical achievement over storytelling, which can sometimes happen when directors start really exploring the possibilities given them by various technical advances. Happily, that was not the case. I think largely because director Sam Mendes, who co-wrote the screenplay, pulled a lot of this story from stories that his grandfather had told him about his grandfather's time, fighting in World War I. And so there was a degree of verisimilitude, a degree of personal investment in the story that I think was really important to allow for it to, you know, sort of stand side by side with the technical achievement rather than being sort of subsumed by it. I'm not going to go into too much detail just because there are potential for spoilers. But basically, it's this sort of day in the life kind of situation where you meet two British soldiers. They're sort of dozing in a field as they're sort of waiting between battles. A pair of Lance Corporals. There's Lance Corporal Blake, played by Dean Charles Chapman, and Lance Corporal Schofield, played by George Mackey. And they're called to go to meet with their superior officers. And so they go, and right from the beginning, you know you're in for something special because you follow them, and they go from the field, like, into the trenches, and so you're following them through the trenches, the twists and turns, and you're watching as the camera is sort of panning and tracking to keep them in the frame, and it's all very beautifully done. And then they get to their superior, where they wind up meeting the general, played by Colin Firth, who tells them that one of their sort of fellow companies is preparing to engage in an assault on the German forces that is doomed. That is, intelligence tells them that it's a trap, it's an ambush. If they go, they're going to be massacred. And so these two guys are given the mission to deliver orders to stand down, and the reason they're chosen is Lance Corporal Blake, his older brother, is one of the commanding officers in this other force, so there's a personal investment there, and they're basically given the thing and said, okay, be on your way, you know, and they have to go across basically no man's land. They have to go through this sort of blasted hellscape of, you know, crater holes and barbed wire and a lot of bodies, and they have to make their way across with no cover, no backup. It's just the two of them, and they have to try to find this other force before dawn, because that's when the attack's going to go off, and we basically follow them through that experience, like through the night and all that stuff. And that's as specific as I'm going to get. I don't think it needs to be any more specific than that. It's a remarkable movie to watch. It's like Sam Mendes and cinematographer, the legendary Roger Deakins, have combined to do something that I don't feel like I've ever really seen anything like it before. You're looking really closely. It's like, okay, where, like, the, you know, it's like when you're watching like a magician, it's like, you know, there's a trick. And you figure, if I just look closely enough, I'll be able to see how it happens. And then it happens. And you're like, okay, I know where it happened and I know when it happened, but I don't know how it happened. And to watch something like that play out is just so amazing. And, you know, early on, I caught myself sort of allowing myself to be sort of pulled out of the story, because I was, you know, I was trying to peek, right, you know, peek behind the curtain. But it wasn't long before I was sort of taken in by the organic nature of the story and really just swept along in the adventure that these guys had to undertake. It's beautifully shot. It's the performances are exceptional. The two leads are great, but there are a collection of really like talented British actors sort of scattered throughout. I mentioned Colin Firth. Benedict Cumberbatch is in this. Mark Strong absolutely crushes a couple of scenes. Like, just a wonderful array of really talented people. And, like, I'm always going to be down for a war movie, and I really love the idea of sort of... I've always felt like World War I kind of gets short shrift in terms of the cinematic treatment. I think that's changed in recent years, which is great. But it's really wonderful to sort of see that, you know, that's those stories finally sort of being told on this grand scale. And it is grand, even though, like, really you only really spend time with a couple of people. But they really they're really brought to life in a way that is just mesmerizing to watch. And there are legitimately half a dozen just like take your breath away scenes in this movie. It deserves all the attention that it's received this award season.
10 Oscar nominations,
yep,
I believe.
Yep, won the Golden Globe for Best Picture and for Best Director for Mendes. I don't know that it'll win either of those prizes at the Oscars, but you know the fact that they certainly deserve to be in the conversation. Just a remarkable technical achievement and just a really great movie to watch.
Excellent. Alan Adams with us here on Downtown. I suspect your report on Underwater... maybe a little different.
You know, it's not as bad as you think it's going to be, Rich. Okay. Not great. Like, don't get me wrong. It's not a great movie. You know, but it's not necessarily the sort of relegated to the January dustbin kind of movie that you might expect from having looked at a trailer or two. It's I mean, in a lot of ways, it's basically just it's an alien clone where it's you know, it's underwater instead of in space, and you swapped out Sigourney Weaver for Kristen Stewart. And that's, I mean, if, like, as far as elevator pitch, like, that's pretty close. It's a little better than that. Like, it's not quite that derivative, although it does have those sort of derivative moments. Back of the napkin synopsis here, it's basically Kristen Stewart plays an engineer who's working for a mining company that has set up shop at the very bottom of the ocean and the Mariana Trench, like as deep as you can go, like miles beneath the surface of the ocean, where things that human eyes have never seen roam freely, and they've built this big drilling operation to drill for something. It's never quite made clear what they're drilling for, but something. And as is wont to happen, things go terribly, terribly wrong thanks to the hubris of man. And
as usual.
Yep. An accident happens, and the undersea base begins to fall apart. They have to sort of figure out a way to evacuate. There are mass casualties. Before long, there's only Kristen Stewart. Her character's name is Nora, and like five other people, and they have to figure out a way to get to another base because the escape pods are all gone, but the transit tunnels are all crushed, and so they got to put on their big exoskeleton diving suits and walk across the bottom of the ocean to this other building where they're going to be able to get escape pods. And it's when they get out into the water that they realize that their drilling, well, it's awakened something not particularly pleasant, Rich.
No, no.
Yeah.
No.
And so they're wandering through the murky water because, you know, they're 6 miles underwater, so it's dark. They have their lights, but they don't do a whole lot. And so you start to see shadowy figures sort of darting back and forth in the... And then the gruesome deaths start, as they do, both due to the activities of unseen monsters and the fact that, when you're 7 miles underwater, a leak in your suit means that you basically you get pulverized.
Yeah.
Yeah, because there's a lot of pressure down there.
Well, that's what I hear.
And it gets kind of gross in a couple of spots. Look, it's fine. It's a perfectly fine movie. If you're a sci-fi horror type fan, if you like that sort of genre fare, you'll have a decent time. The thing about it is it would be a much worse movie except for Kristen Stewart's actually pretty good here.
Hmm.
And again, like I'm guilty of someone who sort of dismissed her out of hand following the debacle that was the Twilight series. And you know, I've come around. It's one of those things where I'm man enough to admit that I may have leapt to judgment on Miss Stewart's talents.
Oh, you and a lot of people.
Well, you know, it's not like I was alone. But yeah, she's actually really good here. And the reality is, it would be standard issue like January dumping ground crap without her. With her, it's better than that. Mm. I mean, it's not great, but she really has this. She really does a great job of sort of treating the material seriously, but not overly seriously, if that makes sense. And one gets the vibe that she has some real potential for the sort of, you know, for to be sort of a more thoughtful, be in sort of the more thoughtful action type movies. I think she'd be really good there. Like this performance, like I'd love to see her in a better, see her give a performance like that in a better movie, because I think it would be really great. This one, not really great, but but it's okay. And honestly, like if you're just looking to kill some time in the doldrums of January by going to the movies, okay is okay. And
yes.
And honestly, like it was considerably better than I anticipated, and I'm gonna call that a win.
It's worth the money you paid to see it.
Exactly.
Well, there you go. Thank you, Alan.
My pleasure.
Be careful on the ice.
I'll do my best.
Let Stella lead. Alan will join us again on Wednesday.